So this morning, I'm very pleased to announce Rhiannon Rudisill Roselle. She's been a practicing pagan for almost two decades. She received her degree in religious studies before moving to California, where she joined the First Unitarian Universalist Church of San Diego. She's been a lay leader with their pagan spirituality program, the Earth-Centered Spirituality Circle, ECSC, for 2 years. Alongside being a ritualist and storyteller for ECSC, she is actively involved with religious education at the First UU, teaching classes on world religion and paganism 101 for both children and adults. We're very happy to welcome her here today. I get it centered so it's reading the right direction.
By the way, I'm going to brag on my parents who just became new members today. So I'm very, very proud of them. All right. When I was younger, my aunt was fond of saying that a Unitarian Universalist is a person who believes in, at most, one God. Well, the joke's on her, because the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans, or CUPS for short, was founded in 1985, which was just slightly before I was born. That did away with two of those qualifications. One, God. How about a great mother goddess? How about a whole bunch of goddesses? We'll even throw in some extra gods and some spirit animals to round the whole thing out. When someone says paganism, they've usually got a picture in their head of what that means. In fact, when I said it just now, you probably all had a picture come to mind, and each image that each of you has is probably different from the person sitting next to you. And let me tell you, none of you are wrong. Paganism is a big umbrella term for a bunch of groups that are usually polytheistic and tend towards nature worship. This includes historical reconstructionist denominations like Druidism and Nordic Asatru, and modern denominations such as Wicca and Fairy. I'm going to be focusing on mostly eclectic paganism, and that's paganism that draws from many sources, which is the most popular form of paganism practiced by UUs for what should probably be obvious reasons. There's no single thing that is practiced by 100% of pagans, but we do have some common interests. Author John Beckett, who's a UU pagan himself, likes to think of these as four pillars holding up the wondrous, confusing circus tent that is paganism. Any given pagan or pagan group can be closer to one pillar or to another, or standing in the center, or trying to balance two pillars, or even trying to balance a pillar and what is outside in the world. The first of these pillars is nature. Nature-centered paganism concerns itself chiefly with the natural world and our relationship to it. Nature-centered paganism is actually really based in science. A lot of people who find meaning through science or who understand the world through science still come to paganism through that nature connection. It can just hold the belief that what animates you and me and our cats and our dogs and our favorite trees and flowers is the same thing that animates the wind and the rain and mountains. This coincides very nicely with our seventh principle as Unitarian Universalists, which is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. The second pillar is deity, and this concerns itself mostly with forming and maintaining relationships with the gods, ancestors, and spirits. And deity can be defined, even in paganism, as almost anything you want. And I'll go into this a little bit more, chiefly polytheistic pagans, but there are non-theistic pagans, pagans who do not believe in a conscious, overarching deity that is part of the world. Instead of an infinite deity, polytheistic pagans tend to see deities as being limited. So emphasis on how we understand these deities tends to fall to scholarship. Pagans who come to paganism through that focus of deity love stories, old stories, new stories, mythic stories. They focus on mythic truth, but also historic truth, and the historic context around both mythic and historic truth. They study mainstream history, archaeology, and anthropology, and they use these same tactics to understand not just historic societies, but also what was going on for our ancestors. The third pillar is community. This focuses on our family, our tribe, however we define that, and our community as a whole. People come to community through acts of service and value the interconnectedness of emotion, the web that we make through our feelings and our actions. Obviously, many of us come to religion because we need support. We need something to be given to us. But community challenges us because to get that support, we also need to support others. We need to be part of something bigger than ourselves. For me, this is one area where UU pagans excel beyond mainstream paganism, because mainstream paganism is made up of many, many solitary practitioners, people who come to the practice alone. Whereas UU's, many of our principles already support that teaching of community. We have a goal for world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Our second principle says that we are supporting justice, equality, and compassion in human relationships. These are things that encourage us to form that community. And it's something that mainstream paganism still struggles with, to form a community. The fourth pillar is self. It would be a self-centered paganism. And that sounds bad, but it's not as bad as it sounds. To be self-centered is to focus on the divine within. It's a commitment to making yourself stronger, wiser, more compassionate, and more magical. Through this, you can be of greater service to the world. And this is not something that is new. The inscription at the Temple of Delphi says, "Know Theseton," or "know thyself." The mystic tradition of self-knowledge is ancient. This is the center, this is the pillar that is often most associated with magic, people who want to come through to that one. And magic, to quote one of my favorite authors, Starhawk, is a word that makes people uncomfortable, but it's a word we use on purpose. Words that are more acceptable and rational, scientific, and intellectually sound are comfortable. They make us feel safe, but they make us feel safe because they are the language of estrangement, of separating ourselves from the world around us. So when we say magic, we are inherently putting ourselves into that mix. Being part of a self-centered practice means you are committed to change. Change in yourself, change in your community, and change in the world. It is being strong enough to admit what you do not know, and to accept that maybe in the past you were acting from a place of less information, that you can do better and move forward. All four of these pillars focus on the concept of right relationship. We can be in right relationship with nature. How do we best balance that? Then right relationship with ourself, our community, and with our gods. As I said before, this is a great big tent that includes a lot of people, and the only person who can define you as a pagan is you. But as John Beckett said, the flaps of this tent are up. There's nothing to stop people from wandering in and out. There are no fences, and there are no gates. Paganism differs from other modern religions in a few distinct ways that may be familiar to Unitarian Universalists. We have no one centralized holy book. We have no sacred script. In fact, the pile of reading that you are given when you begin paganism is enough to crush a person. And it just keeps getting bigger the more you. We focus not on getting out of the world, as many modern religions do, a focus on what is beyond this life, but on integrating into this life, that this life and what we are doing here is what is most important. How do we best be in right relationship with the world around us? When I first came to UU Paganism, I saw a lot of people come and go, and I developed the impression that UU Paganism was a really good jumping off place. It was a place people came with questions and uncertainties to learn a little bit of beginning paganism before making their way to one of the many real or more serious traditions. But the longer I stayed, the more I saw people who came back over and over again, people who made up a community, that this tradition, that the UU Paganism, the Cups tradition, was in and of itself a vibrant tradition. Separate from any of the other traditions under that umbrella, we are our own denomination of paganism. We remain welcoming to people who come for the first time, who are nervous, oh my gosh, what is this paganism? And who just have questions. And while, just like any two Unitarian Universalist churches, no two Cups chapters are exactly the same, each one provides a valuable service to its community. Like many other parts of Unitarian Universalism that get undervalued from the outside world and get misunderstood, I found I had deeply underestimated UU Paganism. As we're fond of saying in my home circle in San Diego, we aren't a coven, we're a covenant. And I think I went actually quite fast, so I have a lot of time for questions because that's actually my favorite part. Okay, I mean, some of it is very basic, right? The reason for the season is axial tilt. Right? Okay. Right? The seasons go around because the world is round and it spins and we have a sun and that's perfect. But when we get into mythic truth and we start talking about Ostara coming back at the spring, we talk about Persephone going to the underworld. That's magic at the same time, right? Is it science because the flower blooms and photosynthesis happens, which still to this day, I do not understand photosynthesis, but people who have PhDs swear to me that it is true, so. I do, however, understand the concept of little tiny fairies going out and painting all the petals. So either way, a flower blooming is quite magical to me. So that's one way that they work in concert. Another one that I know is very popular, it's being passed around right now, is forest ecology. There's this very strange thing that happens where trees of one species can nurture a younger tree. There is quite a bit of science behind that. It also looks darn magical, you know? It almost makes more sense to believe, to me, not maybe necessarily to strict scientists in the room who are going to talk about nutrients in the soil. And it makes more sense to me to believe in the animistic spirit of those trees, in the spirit of the community of those trees. So there you go, magic and science working together. So yes, the Cups chapters do meet during GA. I have not yet had the privilege of going to GA. I'm hoping to make that happen this year. But I know they get together. They also do have a meeting in the fall, I believe. It actually started at De Benneville Pines, which is very close to us. And then let's see, I also heard you ask about gathering for other times besides like Christmas to mark the wheel of the year. So the wheel of the year is how the seasons change on the pagan calendar. We have 8 Sabbats, and yes, generally we tend to gather for all 8 of them. The community is open to like the whole congregation. We invite the whole congregation, not just, you know, we don't sure. Tiny up and be like, oh no, only pagans allowed. We, in fact, In my home congregation, we invite not just the UUs, but the wider community, people who don't necessarily feel comfortable coming to a church all the time because of the C word, you know, like, holy, oh my gosh, that's a church and I don't know what I'm doing there. But they feel comfortable interacting with Unitarian Universalism through that gateway of paganism. So we invite the wider community as well as Unitarian Universalists to gather at the Sabbats. Because Unitarian Universalism is so spread out, we have two chapters near me, one in San Diego and one north of us, and we have yet to do anything together because we're about 45 minutes apart. We're working on it. We've been in communication for a couple of things. But distance makes it hard to do very large gatherings for most parts. I think that is something as a community we're working towards, doing large gatherings like that. This is my favorite thing about talking to UUs is they always ask for book recommendations. I'll start there because that's the easiest one. There are two really great introductory pagan books written by UU pagans. So that's that just really excites me that we've written good ones. One is called An Introduction to Paganism by Joyce Higginbotham. Higginbotham, yeah. And the other one is A Path to Paganism by John Beckett. So those ones will specifically come through a lens of the Unitarian Universalist tradition. Once you then get into more broad paganism, anything by Starhawk, you know, she's written quite a few books and they're all quite good. And the other guy is flying my mind right this second. But he wrote Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner. And Wicca is a denomination in and of itself, but he does spend a lot of time talking about the journeys you take on your own before you can find a community, or as you are finding a community. And that's Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner. Let's see, and then your next question, it says 3 points. So your next question was, how did I come to paganism and how did I come to Unitarian Universalist? Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the how did I come to paganism one is always a little dangerous because we call it, it depends on how comfortable you are with the woo level. And we use woo levels because, you know, you go, woo! Right? Some pagans do not have any woo. They're like, we're just going to stick with the nature and in the community, and there are no woo involved. And other pagans are like very high woo and talk to their gods and their ancestors every day. And that was, so how did I come to paganism gets a little uncomfortable sometimes, because I came to paganism through a very high woo way. Mm-hmm. I am neuroatypical, which means that other people would say I am mentally ill, but I don't think of it as an illness, so I perceive the world in a different way. That is how somebody with a very low woo would explain some of my experiences. I explain them with a very high woo. I saw spirits, I saw fairies, they talked to me, they helped me make sense of the world and my relationships and how I could best interact with the world. And then paganism, and then when the rest of the world was telling me that made me crazy, paganism helped me define that, helped me function in a world that thought I was very strange. And that's something that paganism is actually really good at, is integrating, is helping neuroatypical people integrate into a world and help them function in a world that doesn't necessarily perceive as they do. So that's how I came to paganism. How did I come to Unitarian Universalist is also, all while I was getting my degree, I actually made fun of Unitarian Universalists. I was maybe well known for it, for, you know, saying many of the things that you have heard all the time. Oh, they don't believe in anything. Oh, they're so wishy-washy. What is that church off on the fringe anyway? When I moved to San Diego and moved from being a solitary practitioner to deciding that it was time for me to find a community, I did what any millennial would do. I went to the internet and I Googled San Diego pagan circles. And the very first thing that popped up was a link to the Unitarian the first church of First Unitarian Universalist Church of San Diego, and they had a pagan circle. And I'm thinking, what is a pagan circle doing at a church? All right, this I have to go check out. So I went to Unitarian Universalism specifically for the paganism, and that and the pagan circles is where I first found my home. And for a long time, I would skip services, and I would find excuses not to be involved with the other aspects of it. But as I stayed in that community and as I talked to the people, I found that there was no mismatch between my pagan values and the Unitarian Universalist values. I actually just recently became a member of my church because for a very long time I was uncomfortable with the label of being a Unitarian Universalist. And I just wanted to be a pagan. And so recently, as I have been doing this study and thinking about it, I realized that no, a Unitarian Universalist pagan, that is an appropriate title to have. And that was, there you go. That was the story of that. Our year starts with Yule, the winter solstice. So we just passed it. So let me first do, right? You have the whole wheel of the year. You have the winter solstice and the summer solstice and the two equinoxes, spring and autumn. And then you have what we call the cross quarters, which fall halfway between a solstice and an equinox. Okay, so we start with the Yule. Now I'm gonna have to go like this. So excuse me while I make a bunch of weird hand gestures. So we start with Yule, and then we go to Imbolg, which is the celebration of the first buds of the dawning light. Then the equinox Ostara, the spring equinox. Maba, nope. This is like naming the reindeer. You can't do them in order. I'm like, let me move backwards and we'll go this way. I just came past all the autumn ones. So we're going to move backwards for a second. Then is back this way in the fall is Samhain. Mm-hmm. Also popularly known as Halloween. Mabon is the autumnal equinox. Lammas, celebration of the harvest. Lammas is the first harvest or the bread holiday. Litha is the summer solstice. Summer solstice, equinox is Ostara, and Beltane. How did I miss Beltane? That's the most fun one. There you go. With the one with all the fire and the other stuff. It's all adults here, right? I know that didn't quite go in order, but that was all of them. Yule, Imbolg, Ostara, Beltane, Litha, Lammas, Mabon, Samhain. And what kind of rituals?
Oh, that's
true. We have to...
Yeah, there's a lot of rituals. Because again, right, you have your whole umbrella. So how you celebrate them depends on your tradition and how you've connected to them. It also depends on where you are in the country. I know a lot of pagans, for instance, who like go really big, go big or go home, really big for Samhain and Yule. And then they're like, wait, did Imbolg happen? You know, it's like a flyover holiday. Yule tends to look a lot like reclaiming Christmas, right? We have lots of evergreen trees, and in San Diego, we've done a thing where we've like taken back all of the Christmas carols. We're like, these are all ours again. We'll just take the Jesus names out of them. Imbolg is often candlelit, has a lot to do with candles. It's also called Candlemas in other traditions. Often celebrates Bridget, goddess of poetry and new beginnings and creative endeavors. Ostara is a spring festival. That's when we dance the maypole. Wait, no, that's Beltane, just kidding. But we there's a lot of things that look like a very secular Easter, right? We do bunnies and eggs and egg dyeing and going out and planting gardens. Beltane is when we dance the maypole and jump fires and swear to relationships. It's a very popular time to get married. Litha is also a very popular time to get married. Longest day, we celebrate the sun, the strength. Midsummer, bingo. The strength of all the things we are doing, of everything coming to fruition. And then we move into the harvest holidays. Like I said, Lammas is the bread holiday. It's because that's the first thing to come in when you harvest is all the grains. So that one's all about food and giving thanks. Then Mabon gets even bigger with the food and the thanks. We've been known to replace Thanksgiving and just do Mabon instead. It's about a month earlier than Thanksgiving, which can free you up for a weekend if you go that way. And then Samhain is the final harvest. That one's actually is the most solemn. It's about the end of the year. We turn towards the dark half of the year. We think about going inward into our own darkness, and we celebrate our beloved dead, right? For a lot of pagans, that is the time of the year when the veil becomes thin. And we can really call to our ancestors. Living right on the border of Mexico, we combine it very often with celebrations for Dia de los Muertos. So.
Thank you so much. We have to.
I'm told I talk too much.
But no, you're not. And also, you will be here for coffee hour, right?
I will. I will be hanging out. Scott Cunningham wrote. Pagan for the Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner and several other very good books. Thank you so much for having me talk.
Rhiannon will now lead us in a pagan meditation to close our time together.
Since I talk so long, I'm actually just going to open the circle. Is that okay?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, please rise in body or spirit, and we will start center and then face north if you wish. Spirits of land, spirits of this building, spirits of this beloved community, thank you for your presence today and the blessings you have bestowed upon us. Spirits above and spirits below, spirits of the cosmos and of the wild, thank you for your presence today in our sacred circle and the blessings that you keep us searching for. We release you with love and gratitude. Farewell, spirit.
Farewell, spirit.
Face the north. Spirits of North, spirits of Earth, thank you for your presence today in our sacred circle and the blessings that you grow in us. We release you with love and gratitude. Farewell, North.
Farewell, North.
Face the West. West is towards me. It's okay. It's okay. Spirits of West, spirits of Water, thank you for your presence here today in our sacred circle and for the blessings you pour out onto us. We release you with love and gratitude. Farewell, West.
Farewell, West.
Spirits of South, spirits of Fire, thank you for your presence here today in our sacred circle and the blessings you kindle in us. We release you with love and gratitude. Farewell, South.
Farewell, South.
Spirits of East, spirits of Air, thank you for your presence here today in our sacred circle and for the blessings you breathe into us. We release you with love and gratitude. Farewell, East.
Farewell, East.
And then here are our very common words. The circle is open but unbroken. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thank you so much, Rhiannon. And you can all greet your neighbors, and we have coffee and tea afterwards. Thank you.